Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Australia have retained the women's Ashes. It was yet another thriller in a series Heather Knight described as the best in the history of women's cricket, but a Nat Sivabrunt century couldn't quite get England over the line. Welcome to the Wiz and Ashes Daily Podcast. I'm joined by Raf Nicholson. Raf, that was quite something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was another nail-biter in what's been a series of nail-biters. So you can kind of understand Heather Knight saying that this is the greatest series of all time in women's cricket, although that is quite some claim. But yeah, it was just one of those where you kind of weren't quite sure what was going to happen. I think there was obviously a point sort of midway through England's chase where it was a bit like, yeah, Australia have got this. And then of course Nat Sivabrunt was just towards the end, you just thought she could kind of make this happen actually.
Yeah, I guess, well, we've got you, I mean, you're the expert. What would be the other candidates for the greatest series of all time?
Wow, okay, well, I guess there was a series in there was England in India in the winter of 95-96, where there were, I think there was like a tied test and then like a test where they won by two runs, and there were just a series of very close games, but of course it wouldn't have had anything like the coverage. But yeah, you probably want to get Claire Connor on the pod to talk about that one, because that was one of her earliest series for England.
Yeah, I mean, because I guess that's the other thing that's made this series so great, isn't it? Is the it's just like, I mean, you know, three sellouts for the ODIs, like not quite sellouts, but packed houses for the T20s as well. What did it feel like as England was sort of getting close and getting maybe within touching distance of doing something pretty special in Southampton?
Well, you could hear the Barmy Army trumpeters for a start, which has been a new thing at women's cricket. I really don't think that they've been at women's matches before. And I guess, yeah, the crowd kind of didn't quite know what to make of it, because I think some of them had sort of almost thought, oh, shall we start getting out of our seats and kind of wandering around, because we all know the Aegeus Bowl is a little bit of a difficult ground to get out of if you've ever been. And then suddenly, those last sort of seven overs or so actually looked like England might be about to pull off the miracle. So it was kind of quite quiet, I think, because people were just very nervous.
Nat Sivabrunt has a way of like, it's a thing that lots of great all-rounders have, and it's like a specifically all-rounder trait, I think, when a game is like almost gone and she kind of keeps it alive longer than there's any right to. Like, there was, I guess, the World Cup final last year, the 100 eliminator as well was a bit similar. What is it about her, I guess, that like means she can sort of summon that when it's almost completely gone?
She's just such a calm person. And it's a cliche, isn't it? And we, you know, we talk and we write about people playing calm innings, but she's just always calm. And actually seeing her really emotional and really kind of excited about stuff is quite rare, because she's just very placid as an individual. And I know that her wife, Catherine Siverbrunt, has talked a lot about this, about them kind of being the yin and the yang a bit. So obviously Catherine Siverbrunt, notoriously very fiery, and Nat Siverbrunt is the kind of calm person in the relationship. So I think that she just retains that calm. I do think, though, that her innings today was kind of representative of a little bit of a team change, though, to the kind of mentality of them, because it really feels so much like this series they've approached it differently, and they have genuinely believed in very difficult situations that they could win matches. And of course they didn't quite manage to do it today, but they did at Bristol, and they did at the Oval and at Lords, in kind of three matches where they were quite tight situations. And you just felt like previous incarnations of England, even ones captained by Heather Knight with some of the same personnel, might have just folded. But actually this England side aren't doing that anymore. And that, to me, is kind of what's changed this series, I think.
Yeah, there was a great moment when Nat Siverbrunt got to her century, and Catherine was on TMS. So her reaction was obviously like absolutely sort of massively like so happy, and Nat like barely acknowledged it. Like she looked almost like annoyed. I think she hadn't hit it to the boundary. And then like when the crowd wouldn't stop clapping, gave the sort of like half a bat raise. But yeah, and then with that, just with that last shot, there was a moment, I was watching it on TV, when the ball goes up, I thought it was maybe sailing into the stands, and then it comes down and lands. As obviously safe, but safe for Australia. But yeah, it was amazing. And also just as her record against Australia as well. So she averages 44 overall, which is like obviously exceptional. But it's 58 against Australia, the best side in the world by distance, 300s against them now. Yeah, she's just brilliant.
Yeah, unfortunately all in a losing cause. So that will be a record that she'll be keen to change at some point.
yeah, maybe in the third ODI. I guess Nat Siverbrunt wasn't player of the match. Alana King was. Let's talk about her, because I mean, that ball to bowl Tammy Beaumont in particular, if you haven't seen it, go and look it up, because it's what pitcher's leg hits off. It's like a classic Ashes delivery, and that was obviously a huge moment with Beaumont going so well. She's just a brilliant bowler, isn't she?
Yeah, it was great in the press conference, because somebody asked her about that dismissal and she said, oh, I haven't watched it back yet, but my dad was on the balcony shouting, that was a ripper. So I knew it was a good ball. So I thought that was very funny. But yeah, it was a brilliant delivery. And it kind of looks like a bit of an inspired decision in some ways by Australia to bring her back, but also a bit of a strange one to have then left her out in the preceding four white ball games after having played in the test.
I mean, so they picked both Wareham and King in this game, and obviously George Wareham had that decisive moment in the final over where she, what, hit 28 runs, was it? The second most ever in a women's ODI over. But is that, I mean, it's tricky when Australia have so many good players. They can easily bring in someone and then they do something brilliant and you're like, why weren't they playing? But it's because they just have so many players? Or do you think they are still kind of working out where their spin pecking order sort of is, I guess?
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right that they've just kind of spoiled for choice a little bit. And even today they played, I think it was four frontline spinners, and how often do you see that, even in the women's game where spin is a little bit more dominant? So they obviously kind of made that quite brave decision in some ways to change things up a bit. I think, yeah, there's an element of being spoiled for choice, but also there's been some, the difficulties they've really been having has been with the pace bowling. So I guess that perhaps partly explains that decision to have an extra spin option. Although I'm a little bit surprised, this is going to be controversial, that they're kind of persisting with Megan Shute, because I feel like maybe she's done, if you're going to drop her or Darcy Brown, then you might think, we might look at their records this series and think that, has Darcy Brown done anything worse than what Megan Shute's done? But yeah, it was a kind of an interesting decision selection wise.
Yeah, I guess it felt to me like a reaction to the last ODI, when they basically lost control essentially in that first 10 overs, and as much as it was all the quicks, Darcy Brown with the extra pace, if her radar's a bit off, then that has the potential to do that again. Whereas maybe they'd feel like, obviously in terms of maybe not the same penetration as Brown, and it felt like they opted for control today. And actually England basically got away from Australia in that in the first ODI and then got pulled back in this game. Although England got off to a good start, it never felt like they were like too far ahead of the game. And so it wasn't like Australia were clawing it back. They were just like relying that they would build pressure and the wickets would come.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, what England really needed, and this is going to sound awful, is for Sophia Dunkley to get out a little bit earlier than she did today, because it was just painful to watch. She was so she just looked stuck. And like she couldn't score even a single run. And obviously in the last match, what happened was that she scratched around for a bit and then got out, and Alice Capsey came in and was able to kind of dominate that power play. And what we saw today was England going, oh, well, we haven't lost a wicket in the power play, so we can drop Alice Capsey down the order. And I'm not sure that actually worked very well.
Yeah, and there were also so many extras in that first game that even if one of the batters wasn't scoring that quickly, the partnership was still going along, as it was in this case as well, I guess, but still wasn't going that right. What do England do there for the next video? Because there's not a spare batter in the squad, really, is there? I mean, but do you think they might just think about dropping Dunkley down the order? I guess there's no time to call in a replacement, I guess. Or do you think they'll stick with her for this game and then reevaluate?
I think they'll probably stick with her. I think Heather Knight has a lot of faith in her, and perhaps, you know, deservedly, because she has had a good run of form kind of leading into this series. She's certainly a much better player than she showed today. But yeah, I think we'll probably see an unchanged England going into the next ODI on the basis that, they've very much been kind of talking the talk about, we all really believe in each other as a team. We all really think that everyone can do everything. And it would just show a bit of a lack of confidence to jiggle around with that order. That's my reading of it anyway.
Yeah, we've just talked a lot about England, and this is, I guess, an Australia moment with them having retained the Ashes. How do you think they'll view this? I mean, Shelley Nitschke, the coach, was on the TV coverage after the game, and sort of, she obviously there's still a game to play, so she was still talking as if, you know, had lots to improve, which is obviously true. Equally, they're a team who are missing some key players, and I guess for Alyssa Healy as well, this would be quite a big moment to have sort of got them over the line in this way, even if it hasn't been pretty, they've kind of got the job done, I guess.
I don't think they do see it as job done, although it's an interesting one, because obviously they have now retained the Ashes, but to win the series outright, they've got to avoid losing the next game. And so they are still very much talking the talk of, no, we've come here to win the series outright rather than just to retain the Ashes. So I think there's definitely a feeling, and Alana King reflected this in the post-match press conference, just sort of saying, well, we were celebrating a bit, but we're not totally celebrating because we haven't done yet what we came here to do. Now, it will be interesting to see whether that narrative then changed if they do lose the final game, because obviously they then still get presented with the Women's Ashes trophy and will be expected to kind of publicly celebrate. But I think from where we are at the moment, they don't see it as job done.
From an English point of view, they probably wouldn't have admitted this, and maybe it's not the case, but if you'd said before the series to most England fans that you're going to draw the series scoreline and win both white ball series, and also an ODI series win would be Australia's first defeat since 2013, I think, so in a decade, basically. Obviously, it hasn't happened yet, but that would be an extraordinary achievement in and of itself, even if it's not what they actually set out to do, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And I already wrote something for The Guardian before this match, saying I think this series already represents a kind of changing of the guard moment between the sort of Australian ascendancy and Australian invincibility, to actually we're moving to a point now where that kind of golden Australian generation is coming to an end. And therefore, we're not going to see always Australia winning everything all the time, perhaps. I don't know whether I'm getting ahead of myself, because obviously, you know, they've just won today and they could end up winning that final match. But even for England to have won three back-to-back matches in a row, when everyone, including myself, had totally written them off, is actually an astonishing achievement in many ways.
The only worry I have, or the thing I was thinking in terms of England, is that, as you say, when England were, what, five down, it wasn't game over, but it felt like game over a little bit. And then you compare that to when Australia were five down, and it still felt very likely they were going to get up to something pretty imposing, I guess. And it still feels like, although England have some promising young players, that so much of the batting in particular just rests on Beaumont, Knight and Sivabrunt still, right? Like, if one of them doesn't get a big score, we're not yet at the stage where you're looking at the rest and thinking that runs are coming from somewhere. Is that fair enough? Is that the next thing England will be hoping for?
Yeah, I mean, I think England, yeah, have probably still got a longer tail than Australia. And that's been one of the hallmarks, hasn't it, that over the years that Australia's kind of late middle order have been able to come in. And, you know, they've had moments where they've had like Elise Perry coming in at seven or eight even. And you're just like, what is going on here? We've taken so many wickets and we've still got one of the best players in the world coming in. But I think in terms of the kind of the crossover of the generations, or the you know, moving on to the next generation, I think Alice Capsey, this series has just proven what an astoundingly talented player she is. And so I do think that, yes, we're still relying on kind of Nat Siverbrunt for the to sort of play the anchor role a bit more and maybe offer that slightly more reliability. But you've got Alice Capsey doing Alice Capsey things at the other end, and that's really exciting. And I also, as I've said, I think that the difference is maybe we're looking at it and going, oh, England are five down, they're not going to put a score on the board, or they're not going to be able to chase this down. But England are thinking, we're five down, we can still do this. And they did do it at Bristol when they were eight down. And they all said, we believed it was going to happen. And it did happen. So maybe they're having the last laugh.
Well, if the previous game's been anything to go by, the final ODI should be something pretty special. We'll have a weekly podcast tomorrow with more Women's Ashes discussion. And then we'll be back again for our final Women's Ashes Daily on Tuesday. Cheers.
Podcast Network.